Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of I Saw the Beatles. Well, today we're going to have a guest who actually managed to see the rehearsal for the Beatles at the Ed Sullivan when they were on the Ed Sullivan Show in August 1965. I was absolutely amazed when I saw this book on Amazon. It was an Amazon suggestion. She's written a book. It's called My Private Lennon: Explorations from a Fan Who Never Screamed. Her name is Sibby O'Sullivan. And I'm really anxious to talk to her and about her story. Hi, Sibby. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. So let's get right into it. So you were 15 when you
saw... I was 15 when the Beatles came on the scene, when I saw them in Ed Sullivan's studio on August 14th, 1965. I was 16. So
okay.
I'm growing up with them.
Right. And you're from the Washington D.C. area, right?
That's correct, right.
Yeah,
My girlfriend Betty, best high school girlfriend, everybody knows the importance of those friendships. Her father worked for the FCC. And so he was able to get us tickets to see the Beatles in rehearsal, the 2:30 p.m. rehearsal on that Saturday. And he drove us up, and we were in, and there they were, and it was wonderful.
Oh, I think you're going to be the envy of everybody who hears this show. Because were there screaming girls at this show?
Yes, there were. The studio itself was small. There was only, had a capacity of 712. So when you think about it, that's really a nice number to see a stage production. And there were screaming girls. There were lots of parents as well. And I'm wondering whether the condition of parents sort of tamped down the screaming. It wasn't a hysterical moment like you see the films of the first Ed Sullivan show or films from their performances in England, but it was still pretty noisy. But you could hear the band for sure. And Paul debuted yesterday at that time, and of course he was just himself with his guitar, and things were quiet when he was singing, but then everybody exploded after the singing. I never screamed. I wanted to always hear them and kind of keep them mine in my own head, and the screaming often interfered with that. I remember going to see Betty and I again, got up early in the morning, took our supplies, went down to the big theater in D.C. to the opening of Hard Day's Night, and we could stay there all day. Nobody cleared out the theater, and it was a very big theater, and it was full of young people, and they were all screaming. And it was very hard to follow the dialogue of the movie. But because we stayed there all day, we knew the plot. We knew what was coming up. And so we could pay closer attention. And perhaps as the day went on, exhaustion, you know, set in to some of the other girls that were screaming and watching the movie over and over again. But the screaming was there, and there was an excitement to it. But I did not participate because I just wanted to hear their music. Why scream when you could ooze,
right?
You know?
Right. What's interesting is you know, I still turn on the subtitles when I watch their movies, because for the life of me, I can't understand John. I can't understand his voice. I'm terrible with any kind of accent, but a Liverpudlian accent just, you know, And I think his was the worst of the bunch. So I still turn on subtitles when I watch their movies. So I can't imagine having to sit there and figure out what in the world they were saying. I would have been lost on that one.
That's so funny because the movie was such a hit and it's such a delightful movie that certain phrases from it, certain sentences sort of did the rounds. So like we were still in high school and I remember my friend saying, "Well, I have to get my bloomin' book out of my locker," because bloomin' book was, you know, how Ringo called a blooming book, and bloomin' book was, you know, a Liverpudlian thing, or I forget some of the other ones that John said. But yeah, the accents, I fell in love with the voices, I fell in love with the accents. I think George was the hardest to understand, but that just might be me. Paul, of course, his mother trained him to speak a little more posh, and so his accent is not quite as guttural, if you will, as the others. But all of their voices, I think, are fantastic.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go back to the Ed Sullivan Theater, and you had talked about how small it was. And just for reference, if anybody used to watch the David Letterman show, it's the same theater, which I've been in. I was at a taping of the Letterman show, so I got an idea of what size, you know, how big that theater actually was. But, you know, certain people remember certain things, and some of the questions I like to ask are things like, do you remember what you wore that day?
Yes, yes. Here, basically, this is my I saw the Beatles live on Ed Sullivan's stage story. I did indeed see them live. I even took a photograph with my brand new Instamatic camera of John, and I have
only
that
one
photograph. Yeah, because you weren't allowed to take photos, and I was afraid that my camera would get confiscated. I wasn't
okay.
The only one. Flash bulbs were going off throughout, but not anything like, you know, constantly. But
did they tell the girls to stop screaming? I have to ask that. It was a rehearsal.
Yeah, they were still screaming at the rehearsal.
Did they ask them to stop? I mean, it was a rehearsal, and I was wondering if they were just trying to, you know, please stop screaming. We're trying to get things done.
I don't have any recollection of that. How it went, I do know what I was wearing. I believe I was wearing a green dress, and I wore glasses, and I don't know what Betty was wearing. And we stood in line outside, like in a lobby, and we had our tickets. And, I must have been excited. I'd never been to New York City before. Obviously, I was seeing the Beatles. I was, you know, a teenage girl. I don't remember my bodily excitement, but clearly I was. And so we're waiting in line outside, and then there's just an usher, just like at the old-time movie theaters, you know, and you have to give the ticket. And I kept my ticket stub. And then we had seated numbers. I think that Betty and I were in the 12th row up. It's sort of a concave studio setup. And I walked in, and this I do remember, but it's so strange. I have, as an adult, begun to doubt it, but I don't want to doubt it. I came in, and there was a piano, you know, an electric piano on the stage, and a man was sitting at the piano, and he wore headphones. Leaning over that man was a man in a white shirt, and they were conversing. And as I was moving toward my seat, I saw this, and I thought, and I looked, and I said, "Oh my God, that's John Lennon," leaning over, talking to the man sitting at the piano with headphones. And then he seemed to be oblivious to the audience, and I'm assuming he walked away. I don't have a minute-by-minute or second-by-second recollection that he walked away, but I thought, I've just seen John Lennon. He had his sleeves rolled up. Now, I have kept that memory, and it wasn't until I started to write my book and do some research that I found out that for this particular show, this last time that they appeared live on the Ed Sullivan show on his stage, that they had some sound problems. Okay, so I think that the issue was that they were performing more intricate songs, perhaps, than earlier performances. They performed Ticket to Ride. Mm-hmm. They performed Help. Obviously, Paul debuted yesterday. And according to the Beatles Bible, which is a good source for all information about Beatles,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
There was a sound issue, and that they wanted to make sure that the sound was going to be all right. And I'm sitting there in recollection thinking, well, that's what they were doing. John
right.
was,
mm-hmm.
you know, conversing with the guy who was maybe a sound engineer or something. So that memory I have, I would love to talk to somebody else who was at that 2:30 dress rehearsal. It
mm-hmm.
was not taped, so there is no chronicle of it.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, hopefully
you know,
someone will hear this show and get in touch with you about it, and you can
please do. Yeah. It would make my day.
Now
I remember other. I'm sorry. Go on.
Now you. Well, one of the things is you would mention it in the book that you know you've lost track of your friend Betty, and
yeah.
you say Betty. Out there, please contact me so we can, you know, get together and remember this and, you know, what you remember and what I remember of it. Have you found her?
I did find her, and we did talk, and she remembered less than I did. What happened is that she moved a little bit before the book actually got published.
Uh-huh.
And so I didn't even have a forwarding address that I could send the book to her for. For her to read, and she was very helpful, and obviously, you know, we have fond memories, but when it came to the Beatles, she remembered less than I remembered. She has the same reaction that you are probably familiar with because you've talked to so many people who have seen the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
She told me that when she has an occasion to say to somebody, a stranger or something like that, or somebody that she's working with, that, you know, when she was a teenager, she saw the Beatles, that person, regardless of their age, regardless of whether they're Beatles fans or anything like that, just, oh, you did? Oh, you know, this sort of excited, you know, historical moment
I started a podcast to talk to these, you know, to talk to you and all the rest of the ones who were there, because it's that exciting to hear the stories. Now, on a more personal note, so people can understand, you know, as I said, I loved your book. It's incredibly well written. It really is. I mean, you know, it's not just another fan book. So you have a degree. What is your degree in? You have a college degree.
I have a PhD in American literature. I taught for over 30 years in the Honor College at the University of Maryland. And so my academic training was in the teaching of literature and creative writing. And the skills that I learned, you know, during my academic profession absolutely helped me to write this book and to do research and to consider, you know, who am I in relation to this great historical moment, which changed my life, and I would
mm-hmm.
imagine that it's changed millions of other lives as well. And so that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to sort of combine my knowledge of the Beatles. I'm not an expert on the Beatles, but I certainly know enough, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to make all that knowledge and my experience of it personal. So we've got a memoir, we've got sort of a historical account of John Lennon, we've got a little bit of analysis of his songs. I take on some of the male critics who have written about the Beatles, not that I dislike them, but that I sometimes have disagreements with them. I would like to point out that the one reason I'm happy that Ohio University Press picked up this book and published it was that so few books about the Beatles have been written by women. There's some good ones out there,
mm-hmm.
no question. But compared to the other authors. And when that happens, there's something, a silencing that goes on. And when you think about the history of the Beatles, it really is a history of those teenage girls, first in England and then in America, that saw something, reacted to it in a very strong way. The boys, they could envy the Beatles, and many of them did, but mainly they just stood by, and they weren't screaming, pulling their hair out. And I'm not saying that is the sign of a true Beatles fan, because it's not. I never did that, and I'm a rabid Beatles fan. But it was the Beatlemania, that female reaction, that was the first story. And so I think it's safe to say, without that female reaction, we wouldn't have the Beatles. So, yeah. You know, women's voices about the Beatles, I feel very strongly, need to be heard. And I'm happy that I can slot my book in a bookshelf along with other wonderful books that wonderful men have written about the Beatles.
Unfortunately, there was a malfunction and we lost Sibby. And there was so much more I wanted to talk to her about. But go out, buy her book. It's really fascinating. And she's one hell of a great writer. It's called My Private Lenin. If you just look that up, it'll come up in any search engine or on Amazon or your favorite book vendor. Again, join us next week for another exciting episode of I Saw the Beatles.